administration to really call it.
Comfort me.
For a prayer this morning from my colleague, the Reverend Tamara Liebeck. Holy One who has given us the breath of life, today we remember to breathe deeply, to rest, to take in, to pause before we act, and then to take in another deep breath, poised on the edge, and risk jumping in. Risk taking action. Risk speaking up. Risk using the gifts we have been given. So that at the end of our life, we may say with absolute clarity that no part of our existence was wasted in fear of failure or fear of success. Hold us. Prepare us the way to begin to offer the gift of our awakened presence, full of love and light today. These and the prayers of our hearts we lift up now into the silence. You may spend time in reflection, meditation, or prayer, as is your tradition.
This reading is from Braiding Sweetgrass, again, by Robert Wall Kimmerer, called Wendigo Footprints. The Wendigo is the legendary monster of our Anishinaabe people, the villain of a tale told on freezing nights in the North Woods. Wendigo is the name for that within us which cares more for its own survival than for anything else. The very word can be derived from roots meaning thinking only of oneself. Any overindulgent habit is self-destructive, and self-destruction is Wendigo. And just as Wendigo spite is infectious. We know all too well that self-destruction drags along many more victims in our human families as well as in the more than human world. The native habitat of the Wendigo is the North Woods, but the range has expanded in the last few centuries. Multinational corporations have spawned a new breed of Wendigo that insatiable devours the earth's resources, not for need, but for greed. The footprints are all around us if you know what to look for.
It is so lovely to be back with you after my 5 weeks off for sabbatical. I have to say that I'm so grateful to this congregation for supporting that time away for rest and renewal, which I so much needed. And it's also such a gift to come back and be with all of you, the people who I am dancing through life with. My time away was wonderful. I spent 2.5 weeks in Australia, where it is summer, where my month-and-a-half-old granddaughter and son and his partner live on the beach. And so conversing in coos and smiles with this very new life and listening to the ocean connected me deeply with the mysterious, grounding wonder that is life on planet Earth. As I walked on the beach and I lay with my granddaughter asleep on my chest, I felt a clear and profound recommitment to my faith, as well as my call as a Unitarian Universalist minister. I did not expect this. My dearest hope from sabbatical was simply that I would return with more energy and practically enough removal of stress that my dyslexia would settle down enough that I could write whole sentences with fewer messed up words, which I have to tell you in my line of work is seriously annoying. But the call that I heard was so clear. It was like a crystal ringing bell, telling me that the most important thing that I could be doing was being with you as we learn to be more loving people immersed in the experience of being alive. I wanted to know how I could feel the grounding wonder of life on Earth in all my days, not just when I was, like, virtually in paradise. And I wanted to know also how the Wendigo, the insatiable evil spirit of the Iroquois people that ravages our world could be defeated. I wanted to learn more about how to be human in ways that are life-affirming and deeply caring. It has been 3 years since everything shut down, 3 years to this very weekend, and that shook most of us very hard. As weeks turned into months and into years, we were afraid and alone, or not alone enough. Our plans and our hopes were crushed again and again. Some of us got terribly ill. Others know people who died. In the last year, most of us have been more confidently able to leave our homes and engage with other people. We've conducted life in a space between the old ways and the new ways that are evolving. Some of us have not yet felt the ease of leaving home and are in another kind of liminal space, wondering how life can ever open up again and what that means. At Wolf, we've used the metaphor of a garden to talk about the pandemic. Our garden, our congregation, was flooded by the pandemic, and so much was lost. Then the water receded, and for the last year, we've been back, noticing what survived, replanting what we have loved, and grieving what isn't going to grow again. So many lovely things are growing at Wolf. Our services are woven through with good music in new ways. Our Sunday services are deepening. We have flourishing small groups, from the women's group to family dinners to small group ministries and many others. As was clear, obviously, in last week's remarkable service on gratitude and generosity, many of us are very committed to living our values and figuring out ways to do that. We have great kids in our congregation, excited to be here, to get snacks, and grow up surrounded by caring people. We have a social justice team who prioritizes authentic relationships with partners who can help us offer care in ways that matter. And we have so many generous people. You are such generous people. We just collected 360 pairs of socks for those who live outside. We gave 2 carloads of food to dreamers who are in college. Over and over, we show our generosity, our deep capacity to care for those who find themselves in challenging and difficult circumstances. We lost some things, too. The hardest losses have been people. Some have never felt safe again here and don't feel connected online, which is very painful. Others lost the habit or became elderly in ways that makes coming really challenging. There are other things we lost as well. There are things that many people are not as enthusiastic about doing as they once were, like making and cleaning up coffee or participating in community events that require both setup and cleanup. The difficult question for us comes when not enough people want to make the things happen that we want to have happen. What is it we do about that? I don't really have an answer for it. It's just something that we're going to continue to have to grapple with as a community as we continue to cultivate this garden that is Woof. While on sabbatical, I spent time musing about Unitarian Universalism, congregational life, and why it matters. I finished a book, 5,000 Years of Debt, a History, by David Graeber, which is like that thick, took a long time, and Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. I started a book called Buddhist Brain by Rick Hansen, a book about how we transform from the perspective of both Buddhist practice and neuroscience. It's looking at Buddhist practice through the lens of neuroscience. And I read Sacred Nature by Karen Armstrong. I also binge-watched most of The Good Place. Karen Armstrong is a religious historian who has written extensively about many of the world's faiths. And she says, and you may have heard this before, it's one of my favorite quotes, that religion is not about accepting 20 impossible propositions before breakfast, but about doing things that change you. It is a moral aesthetic, an ethical alchemy. If you behave in a certain way, you will be transformed. And I have really foundationally come to agree with her. And that became even more solidified during my sabbatical. The things that we do and the thoughts that we have transform how we experience life, which seems in one way so absolutely obvious, but also when we harness it, incredibly powerful. In this morning's story, the Mayan gods, the forces that created life, wanted to make a being who could praise creation and care for each other and the rest of life. And it was not easy. It took 3 times to create such people. The first people just melted away. The second were smart and creative, but had no compassion. The third were brilliant, but thought they were gods when they weren't. And both were dangerous to other living creatures. Only the corn people were humble, grateful, compassionate, and cared for all people and all living beings. It's pretty easy to understand why it took several tries. These are not easy attributes to cultivate. It is so easy to become the other sort of people, those heady with the power of creation and of their own importance, who never notice what they harm along the way. I believe that if we want to live compassionately and fully engaged with living, we need communities such as this one and practices that help us do so. Unfortunately, most of us, in one way or another, have been inoculated with the culture of the Wendigo. Their bite is infectious after all. that insatiable monster who devours everything. It gets inside us, telling us what to do with our short lives. It tells us to make money, to consume, and to ignore what is hurt along the way. It actually makes it invisible to us. It also tells us that we are not good enough, that we need to always strive to improve towards some perfect ideal. It tells us we are only worthy if we are constantly busy or producing or getting likes on social media. It tells us that others who don't meet the perfect ideal can be judged by us or are in some way dangerous. It's exceptionally hurtful. Wendigo is also constant. Remember way back at the beginning of the pandemic when everyone thought we would slow down and savor life more, you know, for the 2 months it was going to last? And then, almost immediately, within 6 weeks, there was so much to do online, so many things you could do, concerts, classes, activities, that it was just more than anyone could possibly do. That's Wendigo, the constant drive to be doing and consuming. Wendigo devours, pollutes, and oppresses. It grows and grows, insisting we grow our desires, grow the things that we do, always expanding to more and more and more. Wendigo lives inside us. It has its own view of the world as well, one that we inherit. It is the understanding of the world that humans are special in some way, and every other living thing is outside ourselves and less important. Those other things, the other pieces of the earth, are to be consumed, to be used for our enjoyment and pleasure, or they're supposed to be enjoyed by us. We use them for enjoyment. We don't connect with them as their own thing, as life that has agency. It has things that it needs. And they're partners on living on Earth. We definitely do not see the natural world as partners in our lives. And we typically do not feel the energy of connection, that source that pulses through all of life. But other cultures and people have experienced the world this way. We know that. From reading and talking to people, it is absolutely possible to feel the connective issue, the connectiveness of the universe. Wendigo also tells us that meeting our individual needs is the best way to live. It fuels the urge inside us to do more, experience more, and have more. It creates the need to always be improving ourselves, doing better. And what's important to know is indigo is literally inside us. It is hardwired into our bodies, specifically through the neural pathways that have been laid down and tell us that we play over and over throughout our lives. Just think of the endless ads you see just going onto the internet or turning on the television or walking down the street over and over and over. We are told we need more. And that is in our brains. And it's probably in the rest of our bodies, too. We don't really know the way hormones and gut biomes all change with different circumstances, but they're beginning to believe that that is true. The culture is in us. But the culture of Wendigo is a lie. It doesn't make us happy to always be wanting, to need more, to never have enough, to never see truly the wonder of what is already here. Learning to defeat Wendigo frees us. You know my first reaction when I hear the kinds of things that I just said about defeating Wendigo? I step right back onto the Wendigo treadmill. I start feeling bad about myself. I decide I have to do more and be better. I think I need to spend more time doing things that will make the world better. It feels overwhelming, and then I get tired. And then I just start, you know, surfing the internet, eating chocolate, and watching television. I numb out. But that is also Wendigo. That idea that there are problems and I am not enough and I must get better and be fixed and I must do more and more and more. And when I can't do more, I numb myself out so I can't feel myself being eaten alive. Wendigo can't be defeated by Wendigo. It has to be defeated in a completely different orientation to life, an orientation that allows compassion, kindness, and love of the world to flow through all that we do. It transforms what we think of as justice work as not something we do because we are good, but instead a response of a friend to a friend in need. It doesn't mean that this other world view doesn't mean that there isn't pain or we don't have agency. Sages across time tell us that this life lived in deep, respectful relationship with all that is enlivens us. It's stepping into the flow of life and letting go. And there's different words and languages across cultures and religions and across time about that process. But what's important to know about that is it doesn't mean that there's no life in the pain. It's not like endless joy. Or that we don't actually have agency over our actions. We're not letting go in the fact of what we do. We're letting go in terms of outcomes, in terms of that we're always in charge of everything. It's a different way of being. And it comes, if the sages are right, with ease and compassion. But reaching that state actually means rewiring our brains. And the only way to really do that is through practice. Transformation is the act of creating and using new neural pathways in our brain. And we must create them and use them, which is kind of an awkward practice, actually, because when you first don't have them, you know, it feels weird to live in a different way in your mind. And then you have to abandon those other pathways, those ones that tell you you're not enough and that you need more and all of that. You have to, like, shut them down. Because if you don't shut them down, those neural pathways don't die. And they will die, actually, if you shut them down eventually. At WOOF, we come on Sundays and we attend to what we value most, to what we find most worthy about life. We think about the best way to live our life. We are grateful. We are generous. We recognize the pains and joys of life. We sing together. We share coffee and tea. We talk to people we know and people we do not know. These are some of the rituals and practices of our faith. With regular practice, they have the potential to change us. Gratitude is an essential spiritual practice, reminding us always that we receive with grace so much more than we give. We give in the offering each week to practice generosity, to always be practicing that giving of ourselves directly to others. Recognizing the joy and pain of life gives us perspective during our own times of pain and joy. Singing attunes us energetically with one another so we can sense our connections with each other in a way that we often cannot. Sharing food and drink, we build relationships. Kind, authentic, trusting relationships are necessary for changing our brain. The changing of our brain, of our neural pathways, is called neuroplasticity. And we know, they know, that when people are in trusting relationships, our brain is more flexible. It's easier to build new neural pathways. It's easier to change the way you use your mind. But when you are afraid and alone, our brains don't change. They shut down. They get hard. They're not plastic anymore. And that is why we need small groups where we build caring relationships. And this is an essential practice of our faith. So is having covenants with each other about how to be together. The practice of covenant requires we interact with each other in kind and respectful ways. Of being being in the world that builds the kind of relationships that are inherently satisfying and create meaningful lives. They weren't in covenant in the story The Good Place, if you've seen that series. It's actually about a group of people who are really not good people, who keep bumping into each other in ways that are painful and difficult, but help them become more caring and kind people. This is a human experience. And you use, when we are at our best, we do that on purpose. We bump into each other and we repair. Because in that, we build trust and we build new ways of being in the world. Ritual and spiritual practices in communities of faith are intended to focus us on what we pay attention to, what we prioritize, and how we experience life. As Dan Boyce quoted from the Taoist Lao Tzu last week, "Watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habits. Watch your habits, they become your character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny." My question for us now is how we might consciously encouraging more practices that change our relationships to ourselves, each other, and the earth, that can transform Wendigo. So much is at stake, as you all know. And I believe it is the task of communities of faith to offer the world stories and practices and ways of being that can transform us. Unitarian Universalists have a life-saving values for this time in history. Our call now is to practice them and discover new ways of being alive so we can offer hope in these challenging times. So what kind of practices are you talking about, you might ask? Fortunately, religious and spiritual traditions offer many possibilities of transformations that have worked for people with the same physiology we have for millennia. And I know many of you already practice some of these, but here's some. Practicing gratitude. Practicing generosity as a habit. Being mindful and present in the moment. Doing service for others. That's really transformative because it gets us out of our own self and prioritizes connection. Silent time in nature. Just being and listening. Attending to the positive moments in our lives and letting them stretch out and become part of who we are. Our brains make the negative stuff actually be more prioritized. That's just how we were built. So you got to do something special if you want the positive to flow through your life. Being in small groups that focus on meaning making is another spiritual practice. Engaging in anti-oppression work, which really bumps us in to other things and helps polish and change us. Many of these spiritual practices are quite simple. They're easy to slip into your life and not intended actually to make us better people. They aren't shoulds, but instead conscious decision to play around with shifting how we experience life. And when we experience life differently, our priorities change. We're transformed. We're different. We have different ideas of what's important, how we should spend our time, what fills us and feeds us. It shifts us away from Wendigo. What I came away from sabbatical wanting for us was to add something to the garden that we are replanting and growing and noticing right now, that where we more consciously focus as a community on learning and discussing practices that transform us. I don't actually have any specific plans for how to do that. I've only been back a week after all, but I do welcome all of your engagement in this process. I'd love to hear from you about your practices, about how that's hard, like what is the best way to support each other? What are the methods that we can use to do that? But today I just have one idea. For today, perhaps we might all practice gratitude, just for today. If you only have one prayer in your entire life, thank you, it will be enough, said the German mystic, Meister Eckhart. Some believe it is the foundational spiritual practice. So today I invite you to practice gratitude for the rest of the day. Say thank you for everything that you receive. Say thank you for food, for air, for gravity. Say thank you to the people in your life. Say thank you to your pets. Say thank you to the trees. Say thank you for the people who make WWF happen. Sometimes they don't hear from everyone. You can say thank you to our marvelous tech team, to our musicians. You can say thank you to the people who make and serve and clean up coffee, to the people who organize, to the people who greet, to the people who lead. Just say thank you to each other. My gratitude is to each and every one of you for showing up here today and having faith that gathering in communities like WWF makes life richer and more meaningful. I am so grateful that we all decide to show up for each other. Because when you come, you're not just coming for you. You're coming for the other people who need you. I believe that all of us just being here this morning is hope for the world. We are the people made of corn, full of praise and kindness, gratitude and respect. And in the words of the hymn we are about to sing, let us be the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change. Let us learn to lead in love. You may rise.
The B that's right next to middle C.
We're going to sing the song through three times, so if you don't know it, you can join in as you come to know it. If you do know it, please sing along right from the beginning. And either way, feel free to snap.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now. And what a time to be alive. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time to that we thrive. It is time we lead feed ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
Reverend, she's a colleague as well. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are not perfect, but we are perfectly fitted for this day. We are not without fault, but we can be honest to face our past as we chart a new future. We are the ones we've been waiting for. May we be bold and courageous to chart that new future. May we have faith in a future that is not known. We are the ones we've been waiting for. I extinguish the flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with all of us until we meet again.
Carry the flame of peace.